I need to be able to say, oh God, you're my God. Earnestly, I seek you. My soul thirsts for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water. This morning, we are in Psalm 63, so these 11 verses, verse 1 through 11. I want to talk to you this morning about this simple truth. There is nothing better than a personal relationship with God. There is nothing better than a personal relationship with God. I believe that's what David is celebrating here in Psalm 63. And I believe that in this psalm, he actually gives you three reasons of why he can state that. Why he can state that the Lord's steadfast love is better than life. There is nothing better than a personal relationship with God. There is an interesting phenomena that takes place. Maybe your kids are going through this or have gone through this. Maybe you actually went through this. Maybe your grandparents went through this with your parents. There's an interesting phenomena that takes place, especially within families where the parents go to church. Because when the parents go to church, where do the kids go? The kids go to church. The kids are going to be part of the church. When most of the community goes to church, where's the most of the community going to be? They're going to be in church, right? But the phenomena that takes place is this, that when a child becomes a young adult and they move out of the home, and the child moves off and they go off maybe to college, or maybe they move off to another town and they go to work, at that point they are brought to a junction in their life where they have to understand whether or not they went to church because their parents went to church, or they're going to go to church and be about God's people because they actually have a personal relationship with God. And there are some who will just flat out quit going to church. There are some who will just flat out quit having anything to do with God because they were at church because their parents were at church. They were at church because that's where their community was. But they weren't at church to behold God's power and glory. They weren't at church to have personal relationship with God. But David here celebrates a magnificent truth. There is nothing better. Nothing better than having a personal relationship with God. Like I said, he's going to give you three reasons here. Let me tell you, it is possible. It is possible for you to be an active member at church and not have a personal relationship with God. It is possible for you to be entirely present this morning, to even have sung the songs, to even have put money in the offering plate, but not have a personal relationship with God. It is entirely possible. It is entirely possible to live your entire life within the context of a Christian culture and yet spend an eternity in hell. In fact, Jesus said that this is true. He said in that last day, Matthew 7, in the last day, in the day of judgment, that there will in fact be many who say to him, Lord, Lord. But what's he going to say? Depart from me. I never knew you. I don't know who you are. You don't know who I am. You call me Lord. The demons say the same thing. But you don't know me, and I don't know you. There's nothing better than a personal relationship with God. Let me tell you, there is no substitute for it either. Nothing better than a personal relationship with God. When you look at Psalm 63, let's discern the structure of the passage first, and you'll see where this is going very quickly. In the English translations, I actually disagree with how they have broken up these stanzas. I think that these stanzas ought to be broken up in another way, and I think that the text actually reveals that to you. In three different places in Psalm 63, David makes a comment about his soul. Three different places he makes a comment about his soul, something that is going on inside of his own heart. Something that's going on in the innermost deep recesses of his being. And in those three sentences, or those three statements about his soul, he explains to you why that's going on. And those are the three reasons that he gives you for being able to say, the steadfast love of the Lord, better than life. Nothing better than this in a personal relationship with God. Look with me real quick at verse 1. He says, my soul thirsts for you. Verse 5, my soul will be satisfied. And then in many English translations, verse 8 will be attached to that second verse of this song. But I think it's actually the first sentence of the final verse. So my soul thirsts for you, my soul will be satisfied, and then verse 8, my soul clings to you. My soul clings to you. David is in a difficult spot here. The heading tells us very clearly, this is a psalm of David. He reiterates the fact in verse 11, he says that the king shall rejoice in God. David was the king over Israel. But when he wrote this psalm, he was not dwelling in the city of David. He was not in Jerusalem. He was actually in the wilderness of Judah. He was in the desert. He was in a literal dry and weary land. In fact, he was going through probably the most difficult time, the most stressful time in his life. His son Absalom, you can read about it in 2 Samuel verse 15. It actually tells you in verse 14 of chapter 16 that David was in the wilderness of Judah. But in 2 Samuel 15 and 16, you read that David's son Absalom hated his father and tried to overthrow him from being king. And so David fled the city. He's hiding in the desert, in the wilderness, and his son Absalom wants him dead. Can you think of something that would hurt worse than that? Than your own flesh and blood, having lived in your home all their life, to turn their back on you, and not only turn their back on you, but actually seek to have you killed. David's going through a difficult time. I would question myself, what kind of song would I be singing if I was going through something like that? God, have you forgotten me? Do you even know me? Has all this been for nothing with my life falling apart right now? Maybe that would be how our songs would go. But I would invite you this morning to make Psalm 63 your song. To make it a song that you can sing. To make it a prayer that you can pray. There's nothing better than having a personal relationship with God. Let me give you that first reason from verse 1 through 4. Look at what David says. He says, O God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. O God, you are my God. I find this interesting that David would say it in such terms, because most of the time when you read in the Old Testament about Jehovah, Yahweh, he is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He is the God of Israel. He is Yahweh. He is Jehovah. But here, David doesn't say, O God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He doesn't say, O God, God of Israel. He says, O God, you are my God. David makes this very personal, doesn't he? God, you are my God. He essentially, what he is saying here by claiming this, by claiming possession of God, he is saying, I know that you are the God of Abraham, but that's not good enough for me right now. I need to know deeply that you are my God. I know that you're the God of Isaac and Jacob and the God of Israel. I know that you're the God of these people. But I can't just bank on you being the God of the people who I join in corporate worship with. I need to know that you are my God. So David says, oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. You know, you find yourself earnestly seeking God, most people do, earnestly seeking God, early rising to find the Lord when they're going through a difficult time, when they're in a tough stretch. Have you ever noticed how easy it is to sleep in a little later when the bed is nice and comfortable and the house is cool? But what happens when the bed is hard and the house gets hot? What do? You get up. You get up early. You got to find a solution. David is in that same predicament. He's not sleeping in his home in Jerusalem. He is not around God's people. He is not near the tabernacle. He is completely out of any place that he would call comfortable. He is probably dwelling in a cave, or he is sleeping on a sandy bank around an oasis. But David is in a dry and weary land. And so he says, earnestly I seek you. God, you are my God. And I have to know that right now while I'm actually going through a very difficult time. Look at what he says. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water. He says, my soul thirsts for you. Something that's interesting about this, have you ever thought about the two most basic desires that human beings have, the two most basic appetites that human beings have, is they have thirst and we have hunger. So we have thirst and we have hunger. One of them is actually much more immediate than the other. You can live without food for upwards of about 30 days. You cannot live without water more than 10 days. And if you are in a dry climate, you can't live without water more than 3 days. And David says, my soul thirsts for you. Yes, he looks out on the land and he sees that he's in a wilderness, he's in a desert, and there's not much water to be had. But he's not thinking about satisfying the thirst of his mouth. What he is saying is this: I'm away from God's people, I am away from the tabernacle, I am away from the city of David, the place where God has set his affection, the place where God has determined to set his presence there in the Old Testament dispensation. And he is saying, I'm away from all that, and my soul thirsts for God. I have an immediate, necessary appetite to fellowship with God. That's how you're going to know that you have a personal relationship with God, when you personally begin to desire fellowship with the Lord. Not when mom and dad say, let's go to church, and you say, okay, let's go. But when you say, mom and dad, we're going to church. When you say, I'm going to read my Bible, because my soul thirsts for God. There has to come a time for every human when they make a decision whether or not God will be their God, whether or not God will be the one that they follow. And the faith of your father will not get you into heaven, nor will the faith of your mother. It's got to be a personal relationship with God. So he says, My soul feels this most immediate, necessary appetite for you, God. And I can't go any longer without you. My soul thirsts for you. Not just such that I could last 10 days, but I'm in a dry and weary land. I'm about to die right now if I don't get to spend some time with you, Lord. But he's comforted, isn't he? Because, oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you. As in a dry and weary land where there is no water, so I have looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory. Because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. In your name I will lift up my hands. When you think about Old Testament Israel, and you think about the law of Moses, the Levitical priesthood, the sacrifice, the ceremony, the ritual that would take place within ancient Israel, what do you think of? I mean, you think of the temple system, and you think of people bringing animals, having them sacrificed, going through these washings, going through these cleansing. Everything is ritualistic. Everything is ceremonious, and you're going through all these different steps, and it's religion to the T. But when David thinks about the sanctuary of God, what does David think about? He doesn't think about ceremony. He's not thinking about sacrifice. He is thinking about the one to whom all of those events points to. He says, so I have looked upon you. So I have looked upon you in the sanctuary. You know, like I said just a few moments ago, it is entirely possible to go through everything that we just went through, even up to this point and on to the end of the service, it's possible to go through ritual and ceremony without acknowledging or knowing or spending time with the Lord. But David says, I have looked upon you in the sanctuary. David's not missing the point here. He's understanding who everything points to. So I've looked upon you in the sanctuary, beholding your power and glory. Now listen to why he says, my soul thirsts for you. I've experienced you, God. I understand what it's like to have fellowship with you, and I want to have that. I need to have that now, and I have a hunger for you because I understand this truth. Verse 3, because your steadfast love, your faithful love, your loyal love, your committed love, because your steadfast love is better than life, my lips will praise you. So I will bless you as long as I live. In your name, I will lift up my hands. David is saying, I am in a wilderness here. I'm in a dry place. I'm running from my son who wants me dead. I am kicked out of my own kingdom here. And I'm in an awful place, and I can't think of anything but how much I want to spend time with the Lord. My soul thirsts for God. Why? Because he has committed steadfast love to me. He has promised to be near me. He has promised to never leave me. That's what steadfast love is. It is loyalty. Everyone in the kingdom, it seems, has turned their back on David. Not God. Not God. You know that? Everybody in your life can turn their back on you. Everything can turn sour for you in a moment. You can find yourself in a dry and weary land, but let me tell you this. If you have a personal relationship with God, he has committed his steadfast love to you, and he will never abandon you. He will never turn his back on you. There is nothing better than a personal relationship with God. Let me give you that first reason. A personal relationship with God secures a certain hope in the faithful love of the Lord. A personal relationship with God secures a certain hope in the faithful love of the Lord. David can say, oh God, you are my God. And I know I'm away from the tabernacle. I know that I'm away from Jerusalem. I know I'm away from the vast majority of the people of God. But I know that I'm not away from you. I know that you hear me. I know that you know me. This is vastly different than people who don't have a relationship with God. Some of the people in the Old Testament who were very religious, had no relationship with God, listen to the way they do things. These are the prophets of a false god, the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. Listen to how they interact with their false god, trying to get him to hear them, but there's nobody home. Listen to this, 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 26 through 29. And the prophets of Baal, they took the bull that was given them, and they prepared it and called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, oh, Baal, answer us. But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they limped around the altar that they had made. And at noon, Elijah mocked them, love it, saying, cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is musing, or he is relieving himself. Or he is on a journey. Or perhaps he's asleep and must be awakened. And they cried aloud and cut themselves after their custom with swords and lances until the blood gushed out upon them. And as midday passed, they raved on until the time of the offering of the oblation. But there was no voice. No one answered. No one paid attention. All of their religious ritual to an empty void, because they didn't have a personal relationship with Yahweh. They were praying to a false god. They had misappropriated their faith. But David says of the Lord God, of Jehovah, he says, oh God, you are my God. And that secures a certain hope for him, even when he's in the wilderness, on the run, and in a difficult situation. Now, let me show you the second reason that David points to. Verse 5 through 7, the second reason why there's nothing better than a personal relationship with God. He says, my soul will be satisfied as with fat and rich food, and my mouth will praise you with joyful lips. He says, and my soul will be satisfied. I have a question there, because he's clearly entering into a metaphor. My soul will be satisfied as with fat and rich food. So the soul is actually not satisfied with the things that we eat. He's making a metaphor, a comparison here. So my soul will experience satisfaction, or more properly put, it will be satiated. My soul will be satiated as the body is when you eat fatty foods. So, it's close enough to lunch. Let's talk about diet for a minute. When you eat carbohydrates, what happens to your body? Did you say it grows? Yeah, when you eat carbohydrates, your blood sugar shoots way up, right? And it happens really quick. But then what happens shortly after? The blood sugar crashes. You got no energy. You're hungry again. And you got to eat some more, okay? And that's why carbohydrates can make you bigger, because they never satisfy you. But when you eat fatty foods, when you eat lipids, when you eat those fatty foods, you take a nice piece of, this is my go-to, but you take a nice piece of steak with the fat on the outside edge and the good marbling on the inside, and you eat a nice piece of fatty steak, what happens to your body? You just kind of, right? And you want to sit down and you want to take a nap because you are satisfied. You are satiated. It holds you over, puts you at rest. And David is saying, that kind of feeling, that's what's going on in my soul. I feel at rest. You see, the soul is not satisfied with fatty foods. The soul is not satiated in that way. The soul is put at rest by something we call peace. The soul is put at rest by peace. See, when you have peace, you can rest. See, have you ever thought of this, that when Jesus is asleep there on the boat, on the Sea of Galilee, and the disciples, the boat is clearly about to capsize and sink, they're going through a difficult time, and there is a storm on the waters. Jesus is over here asleep in the boat. And what do the disciples do? They flip. Their soul is not satisfied. Their soul is not at peace. They freak out. And they go and they wake Jesus up. Don't you know that we're sinking? Would you do something? And what does Jesus say? What does he say to them? He says, "Oh, you of little faith. Oh, you of little faith." Meaning, you are freaking out. You are not at rest because you don't have the proper faith in the Lord. If you would just, see, a lot of times when we understand this, we would think, well, if you just trust in Jesus, you wouldn't be worried that the boat's going to sink. Because the boat's obviously not going to sink with Jesus on it, right? I don't think that's necessarily the point. I think the point that Jesus is illustrating is that he had perfect faith in the Father. That's why he was able to sleep. And if the disciples had faith like him in the Father, they would have been able to sleep in the storm too. Their souls would have been satisfied. They would have been at peace. So David now says, not just does he have a certain hope, but David actually has a comforting peace through trial. Look at this. My soul will be satisfied as with fat and rich food, at peace, completely calm. And my mouth will praise you with joyful lips when I remember you upon my bed and meditate on you in the watches of the night. For you have been my help, and in the shadow of your wings I will sing for joy. David says, even though he is in a tumultuous time of his life, as he's laying there on his bed and he should be robbed of his sleep, instead, he's actually able to rest, and his soul is satisfied, and he is at peace. Why? What is he doing? He's remembering the works of the Lord. He's remembering the works of the Lord in his life. Think back at this. Early on in 1 Samuel, David, as a young boy, he comes to the front lines there as the Israelites, led by King Saul, are fighting the Philistines. And there's a giant over there with a loud mouth, and he's cursing the God of Israel, Goliath. And David comes up just to check on his brothers and bring them some food, and he hears this guy. And he says, "Who is this man cursing Israel, cursing the God of Israel? Somebody do something about this." And nobody else will go. They won't fight Goliath. David says, okay, well, I'll go do it. I'll go fight him. Saul says, hold on, man. No. You can't do this. You're too young. You're unskilled in war. You can't do this. And if you're going to go, you don't have any armor. Wear my armor. And what does David say? David says, when I was a young boy and I was shepherding my father's flocks, he said, when a lion would come in the midst of the flocks, I would chase it down and I would kill it. When a bear would come in the midst of the flocks, he said, I would chase it down and I would kill it. And the Lord will give this giant into my hands also. So David's looking back and he's saying, well, the Lord didn't just give me power to chase the lion out of the flock. He gave me power to chase the lion down and kill it. And the bear and Goliath. Perhaps David is remembering the chants of Israel when they said, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. Maybe David right now is remembering how God gave him victory constantly over the Philistines, or how when he was anointed as king over Israel, God gave him the strength to attack the city occupied by the Jebusites and conquer it and claim the city for himself, the city of David, Jerusalem. And David says, now that I'm outside of that city, now that I've been run out and I am in a very difficult point in my life, I'm not going to forget the things that God has done. I remember him in the watches of the night. When I'm struggling to go to sleep, I remember how the Lord has never failed me. And I remember how the Lord has always taken care of me. And so I have a comforting peace through trial. Write down this second reason that there's no better thing than a personal relationship with God. A personal relationship with God ensures a comforting peace through trial. A personal relationship with God ensures a comforting peace through trial. Think of Paul and Silas there in Acts chapter 16 as they are jailed there in the Greek city of Philippi. They're there in the jail cell. And at midnight, when they should be worried about losing their life the next day, what are Paul and Silas doing? Singing praises to the Lord. In the watches of the night, what are they doing? They're remembering. You know what they probably are remembering there? God gave his son Jesus over to death, and he raised him up from the dead. And of this, we are witnesses. So they have reason to sing. They have reason to praise. A personal relationship with God ensures a comforting peace through trial. Now look at this last verse here, the last verse of the song, verse 11 or 8 through 11. He says, my soul clings to you, your right hand upholds me. My soul clings to you. You've seen that word before, clings. You've actually seen it very early on in the Bible. In the second chapter of Genesis, you see that word clings. And it actually comes at a very interesting point. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. After the Lord God had taken the rib from the man and fashioned a woman and brought the woman to the man, God lays down an eternal principle. And he says, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and shall cling unto his wife. And the two shall become one flesh. Later on, Jesus will say, and what God has joined together, let no man separate. So now David says, my soul clings to you. As though two had become one. David says, my soul is knit to you, Lord. You have pledged your steadfast love over me. I can say, oh God, you are my God. My soul is knit to you, Lord. I'm not going anywhere either. I am stuck. Literally, I am stuck on you, Lord. And even though I'm away from Jerusalem, I'm not away from you. You haven't left me, and I'm not going anywhere either. My soul clings to you. Why? Your right hand upholds me. Lord, I've got nothing else that I could hold on to, but your right hand upholds me. He says, but those who seek my life, I'm guaranteed that is, of your protection. But those who seek my life, seek to destroy my life, shall go down to the depths of the earth. They shall be given over to the power of the sword. They shall be a portion for jackals. but the king shall rejoice in God. He says, Lord, you are my God. My soul thirsts for you. My soul is satisfied in you. My soul clings to you. And I am guaranteed that you will protect me. Nothing will befall me that doesn't go through your hands first. Lord, I know you love me. The third reason that it is true that there's nothing better than a personal relationship with God. Write this down with me. A personal relationship with God provides a secure confidence in the Lord's protection. A personal relationship with God provides a secure confidence in the Lord's protection. You can know if you are in a relationship with God, He's not going anywhere, and He won't let anything happen to you that has not already gone through His hands and been approved of by His will. You can be secure in your confidence of the Lord's protection. What's interesting here in verse 11 is that it actually seems like David offers an invitation of some sorts. Look at verse 11 with me. He says, but the king shall rejoice in God. All who swear by him shall exult. So all who swear. So he's moved on from this personal address. And now he says, all who swear by him shall exult. For the mouths of liars will be stopped. All who swear by who? Is he saying all who swear by David? All who swear by the king? We know we're not supposed to swear by another person. The Old Testament tells us that if we are to swear, we are to swear by the name of the Lord. If we are to make a promise, take an oath, we are to swear by the name of the Lord, and we are prohibited. It says, you shall not swear falsely by my name. So he says, and all who swear by him shall exult. David is actually giving an invitation to anybody who reads this psalm that if you will swear by the Lord, you will place your allegiance and your loyalty in God. Guess what? You can enjoy the benefits of a personal relationship with Him too. You can exult just as well as David can. All who swear by Him shall exult, for the mouths of liars will be stopped. David is making an invitation. Now, David can say this confidently, oh God, you are my God. Because David had been entered into with a special covenant from God. In 2 Samuel 7, God comes to David and enters into a covenant with him. And he tells him, I will establish your throne. You'll be king over Israel. I'll establish your throne forever. And so David has this special word from the Lord where he can speak with such bold confidence about that relationship with God. But if you say, well, when I read 2 Samuel 7, that's not a covenant God has made with me. God has not promised that to me. You would be right about 2 Samuel 7. That's a promise made to David. But here's the good news of the gospel. The Bible tells us in the New Testament that God has actually offered a new covenant to us, where we can enter into a gracious covenant with God, a personal relationship with God by faith in Christ. When we swear by Christ, say, Jesus, God, you are my God. Earnestly, I seek you. I'm not doing this because my parents are doing it. I'm not doing it because my community is doing it. I'm doing this because I seek you. I want to behold you. And I want to enjoy these benefits here. I want a personal relationship. Jesus says you can enter into a covenant in this way. Listen to these words that Jesus spoke to his disciples and thereby us in perpetuity. Luke chapter 22, the night when Jesus was betrayed, verse 19 and 20. And Jesus took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said to and gave to them, saying, this is my body which is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me. And likewise the cup after they had eaten, saying, this cup that is poured out for you is the new covenant in my blood. Jesus is stating to them that what he is going to do on the cross that very next day is for them so that they can be in a special covenant, a special agreement with God where they can say, Jesus, you are my God. Earnestly, I seek you. I have comfort. I have security. I have peace. I have faithful love given over to me because I am in covenant with you. So David extends that invitation to us just as well, that all who swear by him, they will exalt. Friends, let me tell you, there is nothing better. There's nothing better than a personal relationship with God. And there's also no substitute for it. You cannot stand before Jesus when you die and say, "My parents loved you." You can't stand before Jesus and say, "I was a member of Hillcrest Baptist Church." You can't even stand before Jesus and say, "I've done a lot of good things in my life." Either you know him personally or you don't. And when we take the Lord's Supper, you understand what we're actually intimating by taking the Lord's Supper? We're taking the bread, which represents Jesus' body. We're taking the cup, which represents his blood. And we are putting it in our mouth. And we are saying, "Jesus, you are mine. I partake in you." I can't take the Lord's Supper for my kids. That's not how it works. They have to do it. They have to believe in Jesus. They have to really mean it. They have to truly partake in Jesus, just like you do. Not your parents, you. Not your spouse, you. Your faith in Christ alone is what will secure your everlasting life. There's nothing better than a personal relationship with God. I want to invite you this morning. Maybe you have been a member here for a long time. Maybe you have called yourself a Christian for a long time. But you don't have that hope. You don't have that peace. You don't have that confidence in God because you don't really know God. You don't really know Jesus. I want to invite you this morning, no shame. There'll be no shaming here. Even if you've sat in that pew for a long time, there's no shame in this to say, "You know what? Today I'm going to begin having a personal relationship with God. I'm going to move past just all the religion and the ritual, and I'm going to be here from now on to behold his power and glory. I'm going to be here to partake in him. I'm going to begin following him because I need to be able to say, 'Oh God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you, as in a dry and weary land where there is no water.'" There's nothing better than having a personal relationship with God. Would you pray with me?